if we could do a threesome?
She was talking, of course, about
recording. I was trying to record. Someone.
But like, yeah, that's how she teed it up. And I remember Mary just kind of went like,
knew this was coming someday.
These losers. Inevitable. That was my favorite moment of last night.
But then I said, because it was like me, anything. Mary, Becky, I'm like, yeah, but you guys, I think I would probably be bored. you guys would probably just...
I'd be very bored.
I would just be...
You'd just be eye candy.
I'd be watching.
From Milieu Media Group, this is Fun Parts. An exploration of sexuality and spirituality for anyone who's curious or convinced there must be more. With your hosts, Becky Patton, Latifa Alatas, Ashley Lusink, Steve Weens, and me, Luke Bronner.
Fun Parts!
Yesterday, one of the things that I was realizing... Well, actually, I realized it this morning as I was out walking and I was reflecting on our conversation, which I want to say, how rare is it that we get to have the kind of vulnerability where we sit around the table? And I feel like it's important for listeners to know that it was really, that was an intense moment for all of us. It was an intense day of recording for all of us, because it's one of those things where you don't, I mean, you can a lot of times have a conversation that's intimate and you kind of keep replaying it in your mind. There was so much information and there was so much recorded. We couldn't do that. We were all on like overload. And so one of the things that I feel is really important is when we're having deep emotional conversations that involve our body parts, it's really important to make space for what your body actually feels while you're doing it. So like for somebody around the table, they said that their heart, they went away and they felt like their heart was amped up. Somebody else said they felt like they just needed to kind of they just needed movement. And we did have one hell of a dance party last night. I will say that.
Epic.
Which was really good. And I would say from a somatic standpoint, which somatics is about learning how to move your body in healing ways. And I want to say it was really healing. So part of that is I just want to make that clear. But the other thing this morning as I was walking, I realized one of the things we rarely talk about is that as our bodies age, our capacity for the ways in which we may have been able to experience pleasure in the past are going to change as well. And that's where I think it's really important that even as, I mean, we can say gravity takes effect on women's breasts, right? So they're going to lower. They just don't have as much elasticity. And that doesn't make them less beautiful. It makes them in a different stage of life. And that's where we don't have the, because of culture, we have a lot of elements that we're praising a certain season, and we're not looking at the longevity of that body part. And I feel like it's really important for men's penises too, because one of the things we know is that as men age, their penises actually do get smaller. So, and that's not, and as they may get a little bit of a belly, that reduces their capacity for penetration in certain ways. And so it can feel like something different, but it's not bad. It's just a different stage of their sexual journey. And that's why I think it's so important that we have to see sexuality and spirituality interwoven, because if our identity is in how we can perform at a certain season of our life, we're going to constantly be trying to get something back versus explore what is unfolding in, or what might be new in this season of life.
I like that.
It's great.
I was just thinking about being in this unique season of being pregnant, and I'm at 27 and a half weeks right now. And I was just reading a post on Instagram. It was really interesting about how culturally we're all about getting back to your pre-pregnancy body.
As quick as possible.
Yeah, just all this stuff. And the more I'm learning and reading about like all of the things a woman's body is doing and does post-birth and all of that, it's like I'm in this phase right now of like grieving what was and just experiencing what is happening beyond my control and so many ways, and then preparing for what will be, and how do I hold, how that will change, like intimacy is something that I'm like, things down there, if I'm able to birth vaginally, like things will change and all of that,
they
and
will.
Be like, and to put it into a framework that's like, this is good, and this is a newness that's good, instead of like, what was is ultimate and what's held up. Because it's like, it's that whole youth culture and all of that. And so I just think it's interesting when we talk about different phases and seasons, is like, can we acknowledge those things and how? There's a book called The First 40 Days. That's a really beautiful book for post. It's like kind of like the fourth trimester conversation. And a lot of what it talks about is how the foods that a woman needs are warm and nourishing. And it's like helping the furnace keep burning and like nourishing the body. And so often women get so quick to like, I have to get back to my pre-baby body that they don't nourish their body in a way that it can nourish them and the baby.
Wow.
And just these things, I'm like, that is like just a small shift. But we're still thinking outside of ourselves instead of what does my body and my baby need? And how does that set me up for the rest of my life? Because part of this book, it's a lot rooted in Chinese medicine. It's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. But if you care for yourself in this particular way in these first 40 days, being very intentional, it will set
first you, 40 days post.
First 40 days post birth. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. And how that will set you up for the next 40 years. Mm-hmm. And so instead of rushing through that, like we do, like just get back to, which is a very American culture thing. How do we slow down and be intentional and just kind of create this space and how that sets you up long term and hormonal things? And there's just a lot rooted in there that we don't talk about in the West because we're so focused on the external. So as you're talking about that for breasts and penises too, it's like just body as a whole in our many different seasons, you know.
Well, and there's a whole industry. People make a lot of money preying on people's fears to get that body back in shape. And
I mean, after even just like for skin aging, for hair loss, for, I mean, anything that was steering you away from your 20s type body and youthfulness. I mean, I get those ads on Instagram all the time.
Or younger for women.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's 18.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I know women in their, not personally, but like I know it's happening, like women in their late 20s, like already getting lip injections and that kind of stuff because it's just wanting to stay quote unquote youthful looking. And it's just,
yeah, I actually have an older statistic. I think it was from 96 or 94. I can't remember which, but it was a statistic about the amount of time spent for girls. It was done on girls looking at ads in like a teen magazine. It was 15 seconds released and dropped. Is it the serotonin? I can't remember which one drops that. But what it does is it creates higher levels of depression. All it takes is 15 seconds looking through a teen magazine.
Now for Instagram.
For Instagram, yeah.
Well, and now, I mean, and you just watched this. Go ahead.
I was watching The Social Dilemma, which is the documentary on Netflix. It's basically the programmers who design the programs that do clickbaiting. Like if you clicked on this, then maybe you're interested in this and this and this and this. And they were saying a majority of them won't even let their own kids like have social media or be on their phones like up into a certain age in their mid-teens. But the statistics is something like this. You'd have to watch the phone for the exact numbers. But for if you were born in 1996, that means you probably started engaging with social media at junior high or high school. And for girls, I believe it was 14 to 18. And then they did the category 10 to 14. For the 14 to 18, their depression, anxiety, and self-harm, like cutting, not including suicide, went up 74%, I believe. And then 10 to 14, it was like 154% or something like that. And then the percentage of increase was similar to teen suicide.
Wow.
And it's just tragic because you're right. There was magazine era, but now Instagram or anything like that, it's just inundating. And like I've even had to limit myself on socials because I've observed in my own behavior that if I'm on Instagram in particular too much, I'm just sadder. I'm less happy. I compare myself more, even just to my old self or to someone else. And so I've totally clicked on a few like face creams and random hair things that Instagram has showed me. And then I get the product and I'm like, why did I do this? And like, I'm not shaming anybody that does that. Sometimes there are great products out there. I'm also not shaming women who want to put injections to their lips either. Like that's all somebody's choice. I'm just like, at least for me, I don't want to try to keep up with something that's not meant to be kept up with. Like in my opinion, that I want to be transitioning well into new seasons as opposed to trying to just keep myself. Like I would never want my mind to stay where it was in junior high or high school. I'm glad that my mind is moving forward as I'm getting older and I never would want to regress that. And why do I have that same expectation of my body? That doesn't quite make sense.
It's the whole, like, if if I had known then what I know now, we're trying to achieve that thing because I do know what I know now. But if I could look like what I look like then,
no, people would love me more.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, you feel like you're recapturing something that is not able to be recaptured.
Yeah.
Mary and I were looking at some old pictures, you know, and I'm 49 and she's 47 and she's gorgeous. I mean, her hair, she's let it just be its natural color.
And it's silver fox.
Silver and gray and it's long again and it's just gorgeous. But we were looking at these older pictures and both of us looked at each other. You know, they were just like 10 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, but we just look so much younger. And really, like, you know, I'm looking at him like, wow, that's probably at least 20 pounds lighter. And
it's all muscle.
It's all muscle.
And Roy Allen, but I work out. No, like you know, there's that eyebrow thing that happens.
Yes.
That your brows just start getting heavier. And like, I notice, like, what is that? Like, I'm grabbing like an inch of eyebrow. It's not cellulite, but it's like, and anyway. I was so tempted because I have body image issues. I mean, I'm a 49-year-old man. I have body image issues. And I was so tempted to do this thing that you've all been talking about, go backwards. Mm. And I think from a, like, let's just get nerdy 30 for a second. Spiritual growth is not about changing who you are. Okay. And we get caught in that. We got to crucify this and become that. Or it's about following the trajectory of where your life is headed and staying up with it and not getting too far behind it. It's about becoming the you that you are now and accepting it and being at present with it. You know, that's when Moses asks God, who are you? And God says, I am, which basically means I am eternal being without past, present, or future. God, if we think about the divine in that way, perfectly happy, let's say, with the moment. And when we learn to be that way with our bodies, with our spouses, think about how much we can release pressure off of ourselves, off of our partners, from being something other than who they really are. And they're growing and they're evolving. Can we celebrate that? And that's hard work, actually. Like, I talk about it like it's just easy. Like, oh, live in the moment. Living in the moment is very challenging. So I just think what we're talking about is so deeply embedded in the way the universe is made, the way the universe is clicking along, the way the creator created it that way. When we want to become who we were, we're actually fighting against the river. You know, we're paddling against the stream. And it's just, that's why we're exhausted. You know, and depressed.
Well, and it gives that idea of when you say that, even just flow, like stepping into the flow and like how much more freeing that is and just to like go along with what is taking you. And I love, it just makes me think, Latifa, how much yesterday you were using that word presence and intimate moments being present and that, and like that takes a lot of work. Like, and I think when we're talking about all the opportunities we have to distract ourselves, Instagram just being one layer, much less our mind, you know, like all of these different things to kind of carve out. And I think that's also a lifelong journey is how to become present to ourselves, which ultimately is also with the divine in that. But that's, yeah, there is something so freeing. And you can see older people that have never done that too.
Quickly, can I say something to you, Latifa? So 7 months ago in February and now, I haven't seen you since then. We've interacted a few times on your groundedness and presence is like breathtaking this weekend. That we're like, I've noticed that, and really, like, I'm getting kind of teary as I think about it. You have really gone on a journey that I'm like, whoa, in a good way. Like, I want that, you know, like, so thank you for doing that work. It's really been beautiful.
I really appreciate that. It's been a wild 7 months, man. It's been beautiful. Yeah. And I think I've like been surrounded by people who are also doing the work and it's really inspired me. But yeah, this might not be the episode to talk about it, but I think I would like to share like kind of some of the stuff I've been through the last 7 months.
I think this may be exactly the episode to talk about it. I mean, we're, so we're talking about trying to cling to who we were. And this is a show about sexuality and spirituality.
Here we go. I have been introduced to plant medicine, which people have different names for it, but I'm speaking specifically about psilocybin, which is mushrooms, just mushrooms. That's all it is, certain kinds, and then some other forms of plant medicine. But I have done a lot of research, and there's a lot of great books. Michael Pollan has a great book out. Paul Stamets is an amazing, I think he's technically a mycelium scientist, maybe. I think that's the correct term. Mycelium being like the network of mushrooms that are on the planet. And I've listened to a lot of podcasts he's been on, read a lot of articles. And about a year and a half ago, somebody mentioned it to me because she was just like, hey, I know that you are very devoted to healing work. I know you've been through a lot with your divorce. And I know that you're really trying to discover how to integrate your body into healing. Like, I've done, you know, massage, I've done body talk, I've done lots of different things. And I know that my body is carrying things. And I know that I'm storing things in my body, emotions that has been causing me suffering. And I knew that my body was telling me the truth. And I knew that my body like wants me to heal, but I didn't know how to make some connections. And I've done talk therapy on and off for 10 years. I've done EMDR. Mm-hmm. I've done CBT. Like, these are all practices of creating new neural pathways in your brain. So like EMDR, like let's say I grew up with the message that I am not beautiful. Like, maybe somebody told me I was fat or I looked bad in a dress as a child. And so that kind of cements the neural pathway of I'm not beautiful, I'm not worthy, I won't be loved. Like, those would be the deep neural pathway messages. EMDR is a practice in therapy where you go revisit some of those early memories and you kind of speak to yourself and kind of reparent yourself into what would you say to yourself now? And it'd be like, oh, you are beautiful. You are worthy of love and you are loved, right? And you kind of do this work over and over. And so I've done that for years and I've tried really hard, you know, and it's like you kind of make baby steps forward, but there are just areas where I still would feel so stuck. And so I did a lot of research about it. Go ahead.
I want to add one thing to Please. What else you've done
yeah.
for those for whom this would be important.
Yeah.
You've also prayed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like you've pursued
yeah.
the divine
oh, yeah.
in 100 different ways,
yeah. mm-hmm.
orthodox ways
that's true.
Throughout your life. I think that's important note yeah. for a lot of people to hear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had really loving people put hands on me to pray for healing. Like, I've done, I forget, it's some spiritual walking through, I can't remember the name.
It's a theophastic prayer.
Yes. Yeah, Thank you. Yeah. I've done that. And I also think those are all valid methods of approaching healing. I'm not saying, therefore, they do not work. They weren't happening for me. And so I had a friend sit with me who was very wise and experienced. I did a lot of research. It's a very safe, I call it plant medicine. Honestly, it's very safe. I checked with my doctor, my naturopath doctor, and kind of did blood work before because I was so curious about how my blood work would change after, to be honest. I have an autoimmune disease with my thyroid called Hashimoto's and been really interested in research that's kind of leading to the fact that maybe deep emotional trauma mm-hmm. is leading to autoimmune disorders in the body, of the body trying to kind of keep defending itself from things it doesn't have to defend itself from. He thought that was fascinating. I should try it. And I just got the advice to do it. So I spent 4 months setting intention and I did it not this past May, but the May prior. And it was so informative and so healing. And you know, it's you can kind of get carried away with like the geometry you're seeing in the sky and the plants are moving. And I remember seeing like the earth breathing and I like was laying outside with my friend and I put my hands on the earth and I was like, I've been dad shaming the earth.
Dad shaming?
Yeah.
Dad shaming?
Because I said, I've been so afraid to lay in my own grass because I didn't want to get a tick and a tick would hurt me and give me more disease in my mind, right? And so I just haven't even laid in my own grass in my yard, was the truth. And I just, the first thing I wanted to do after I kind of really went in when the mushrooms were taking effect was I wanted to be outside with my plants. I wanted to touch them and smell them. And I went outside to smell my tomato plants. And I looked at my friend and said, I can't smell them. And I know that they're fragrant. And she said, well, maybe that sense went offline right now so you can pay attention to your other senses. Mm. Like, what else is happening? She was amazing.
It's wise.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's incredibly wise. And so I went out and I like lost track of time and words and kind of all these deconstructing things. I was like, music's not making sense. And like, I was just, And basically what was happening is my mind was removing barriers, I think, for me to get to the core wounds. And so eventually, the way it is like if you lean into what you're feeling kind of resistant to or afraid of, you kind of quickly move through and you kind of do a few rounds of that until you get to like what is the period of time where it's time to really kind of do the work. And that in itself is such a beautiful practice because you learn to not be afraid of fear. You learn that the more you recede from it, the bigger it gets and the harder it feels versus if you're willing to just actually move down and into it and then you'll go through it, which for me at that time was I was going through this intense color wheel. And I knew if I got through to all the end of this particular color that I was through it and I could feel peaceful again. So eventually we moved into my bedroom and we had beautiful conversations. And I started to realize, I started giggling a little bit and it sounds funny, but I said, oh, my body's a spacesuit. I said, my body has its own consciousness and it's been trying to tell me that it deeply loves me. And it's been storing trauma and information in certain parts of my body. And it's just been trying to tell me. And I have been resisting being in my body because I thought being in my body, it would just create more suffering. But the truth is me removing myself from my body and trying to just remove myself from suffering, like moving away from the fear, was just making it worse. Yeah. So my body was getting louder and louder and saying, ow, 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 or this hurts or this hurts, your digestive system, your immune system, you know, your headaches, you know, tension in your shoulders, kind of all these things, right? And I just realized, I was like, oh, I love you. And you've just been here with me this whole time. Like you are the thing that has always been with me. You've been my principal witness to the, everything that my soul is experiencing.
My principal witness.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And I was just like, oh, and I saw, I don't want to get too specific for some personal things, but I saw old traumas and people attached to those traumas. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, they hate their own suit.
Yeah.
They're resisting their suit too. And so when they look at me, like they're just upset with themselves. It's not about me at all. And then I just like was able to send love and forgiveness to those people and like feeling things actually release in my body. And then I asked my body for forgiveness. I was like, body, like, will you forgive me? I want to listen to you. I want to be connected to you. I want to love you. And all of a sudden, I didn't care that I have cellulite and that my thighs will always touch and that like my arms are certain ways or that my body is a certain shape. I was just, I remember looking at my body and my hands in particular and marveling at the creation in front of my own self, that my soul has this body right now and it's a gift and it's communicating with me. I'm constantly in communion with it.
There's a element here of we've been talking about being embodied.
Yeah.
And some of what we've embodied with is we've embodied so much with our trauma and our pain that we've disembodied from the goodness of our body. And so some of what that work is that you were doing is you were actually detaching from the trauma enough to be able to see a, what I would say more than just a piece of the sky. You were seeing a bigger picture. And as you saw the bigger picture, you went, oh, this person's wounded and this person's wounded. And if we, what happens in there, we're gathering those wounded parts of ourselves. Janina Fisher is written an amazing healing the fragmented parts of our soul. And it's gathering those fragmented parts together and it's actually tending to them and caring for them versus what I, the language I hear so often in religion is, I just need to conquer this and cut it out of my life. And it's like, I don't know anybody that heals from anger. I don't, and including me, I can't heal those parts of me if I'm angry at them. And instead, by bringing, but you had to detach from the trauma enough to be able to see. And that path was for you. It was the mushrooms helped shut down whatever was creating the disconnect.
Yes. And like I was able to do some really big initial work with forgiving my ex-husband, which I wanted to resist. I told my sitter, I'm like, oh, this is coming up. I think I'm going to have to like journey into this thing with Reed. And she was like, all right, let's do it. You're going to be okay. You know, just stuff with my dad. I mean, I really went for it. And you guys, I've had a severe mold allergy, which made me incredibly sick years ago. And so I've been taking these specific meds to kind of manage it. And I remember I looked in the mirror after my shower and I said, I don't think I have to be afraid of mold anymore. Because I think it was my hyper autoimmune kind of reaction to whatever we know was in the environment. And I stopped taking my mold meds that I had worked for 5 years to get my levels down to a healthy level. And so when I did my blood work 4 weeks after my first mushroom trip, my naturopath, we had an amazing hour-long conversation. And he was just like, Latifah, like, I've never seen more beautiful labs. He was like, you are doing such important work for yourself. And he's like, some of these pieces, like, you've done all the scientific supplement, like, med things you could do, but like, these are singing to me. And he was like, I think this is something you should consider once or twice a year in the therapeutic approach. Specifically, it's called a hero's journey, where you do 3 to 5 grams and do it with somebody that is, you know, you trust, that can help you kind of navigate. And the scientific studies of psilocybin is that, when I was talking about EMDR earlier and new neural pathways, is that in 5 to 6 hours, you are regrooving deep neural pathways in your brain. And the messages that I learned in my first one was that I can trust my body. My body loves me. And I love my body. And I want to stay in my body. It's not like I don't have suffering still. But now I trust my body enough to pay attention and like be with it. Be present with it and say, okay, like, what is this communicating to me? Am I really, do I have rage about this? Do I have sadness? Is it both? Am I experiencing joy? Like, help me. You know, and I actually talk to my body a lot. Yeah. And, you know, if with Christian theology, like, we say we're made in the image of, and that we're literally infused with the breath of God. I think it is moving through our DNA. And so I honestly, spiritually, deeply believe that God, the divine, speaks to us through the cells of our body, that our body is its own galaxy. Like, it's wild. Every time I look at the galaxies in outer space, I think that's happening inside my body. Like, it's magnificent, you know? And so it shifted so much for me. And I've done another mushroom journey this past May, which was really significant as well, but I don't have to go into the whole story. And then about a month ago, I actually did ayahuasca, which is a South American plant medicine. Well, it's a root that kind of grows from a tree that you mix with a leaf. And what was really significant about that one is I feel like I got the message, like, you know, you are powerful. And not as in you're more powerful than anybody else, but you're powerful because you're able to like help other people heal, and your power is rooted in your joy. And joy is the well that holds all emotions. So Latifah, why are you diminishing your power? Why are you diminishing? Why are you making yourself small? Why are you apologizing for yourself? Like, you can help yourself and other people heal, and that's just coming to the table as you are. And that was so life-giving to me. I mean, Luke, you know, man, I've been talking to you for a really long time about, like, how do I dance this line of, like, I've kind of come from this world and I love these people and I feel like I'm starting to go on this journey and I'm learning, like, so much about being grounded in yourself and loving yourself, and it's deepening my ability to love others and love the planet and love God. And it doesn't feel like the evangelicalism I grew up with, but the tenets of Christianity, which is love your neighbor, love God as you love yourself, I mean, that's still ringing really true in such a deeper way that I feel in every cell of my body. And like, I'm so happy. I feel so much inner peace, and it's like,
shows.
Yeah, and I'm like doing the breath work and I'm integrating and talking with my friends and I'm meditating and I just am experiencing such deep joy. And I hear people suffering and like, and I want to be like, you know, this might not be the modality for you, but I was talking to Becky that there are so many modalities that help us drop into our body. So if like, if psilocybin is not for you, that's okay. Like if plant medicine feels scary and unsafe, I understand. Do breath work, like do meditation, prayer. I mean, you can call it whatever you want, to be honest, but like the commitment to actually sit with yourself and listen. And even the Bible talks about being still.
Be still and know
that I am God.
Because then you know. There's something, there's a knowing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is so beautiful just in getting to hear your journey and things like that, it's while it is the plant-based that you're used, there's this whole system that's set up for like community that goes with that, for rhythms
which
that
I've
go
had.
With that. And that's what I'm saying is because you've done that, I think that there's a difference. It's a different type of community than maybe some of our listeners are used to. But I want to say the core is it's the community and it's the commitment to I'm going to actually show up and be in my body.
Mm-hmm. And it's really changing me.
It is. I believe it. Yeah. Oh, we see it. Oh, we see the evidence of it. Yeah. No, I 100%. Oh,
yeah. I don't mean that in defense as much as I'm just like, I'm sort of mystified by it myself because I'm like, I've tried all these things. Like, I have been the person who just wants to do it well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wanted to do my marriage well, you know, and I wanted to be a good kid. And and now I'm just like, oh, it's just, what if I just try loving just myself well?
Yeah.
And then everything else will actually come from that. Because when I love and care for myself, I'm honoring the creation that God made. Mm-hmm. And in that, I'm honoring God. It's like if I made something and gave it to you and you just threw it on the ground, I'd be like, why would you do that?
Yeah. Careful.
If you took it and said, oh, I'm going to care for this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's the guarding. Yeah. It's the
shamar. It's the guarding shamar that we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
Can I share a story?
Yeah.
Because I love what you said. Yeah. Can we help the suffering?
Yeah.
I have a client that I've been working with for a number of years, and she's in what I would call a traditional religious marriage, feeling like she doesn't have a choice. And part of one of the things we've been trying to do is help her see that she's actually in a verbally abusive marriage. Mm-hmm. And that's a slow process unfolding when you've come from the fact of I want to really honor that, the process for her. And what finally happened here, I was out of town for like 3 weeks. So sometimes clients panic when, you know, their counselor goes out of town.
God is out of town.
I want to be kind about that because there's no shame in that. I've done it with my own therapist. Mm-hmm. You're going,
oh,
where?
Totally. I've been
wait. How long are you going to be gone?
Yeah. I can't get an appointment.
Wait. Yeah. So I get that. But it was this sweet moment. And I remember saying to her, I'm going to ask you just to trust your body and listen to your body. So I was gone. And I get this text from her that says, my body says,
call Becky.
You need to come home.
Yeah. No. Well, but basically,
I'm ruining this story.
It's kind of
what
like
about
that.
Bob?
My body says I don't know how to listen. I don't know how to hear. And so I texted her back, and I said to her, "I said, can you tell me what your body's doing?" And she says, "I have profuse diarrhea. I can't keep anything down, and my hair is starting to fall out."
Oh my gosh.
And I said, I think your body's asking you if it's okay that you get in a safer situation. Would you consider asking your body if it wants to be safe? And I mean, this is all over text, and I'm in another country. I cannot come back, and I know this is not about me.
Yeah.
She says she went into her bathroom, and she got on her, just on the floor. And she says, I laid myself out prostrate. And she says, body, do you want to be safe? For the first time, she asked her body that. And, you know, part of me is kicking myself. Why didn't I think of this 2 years ago when we were doing this? And another part of me is going,
she wasn't ready.
She wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that moment, she says she curled into this fetal position. And she says, I held my body and I realized I was hugging my own body. Something that my partner hasn't done, like, cannot even look at me when he's making love to me, has to look away because he's so, I don't know what he's thinking. But she says, I realized in that moment, I have to find where safety is for me.
Yeah.
And she has two kids, so there's this element, it's not just her, it's very complicated. And she basically went to her husband and said, I'm done, I want a divorce. And she walked out of the room and she said, when I got to my bedroom, she said, and I sat on the bed, she said, my body said, okay, now we're safe.
Mm. That's so powerful. Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons it's so very important that we learn to listen to our bodies is because they are screaming at us. They are screaming at us sometimes.
They'll get louder and louder.
They'll get louder and louder. And you know what? By the time I got back in town, she had this huge epiphany. And she just, I mean, it was like her body was giving her what she needed. She says, it's gone. She says, since that day, I haven't had it. I've been able to eat. And her hair quit falling out. I mean, she had huge clumps of hair too. You could visibly see it was coming out.
Wow.
And it was like, she says, it was growing back in. And she says, I don't know what the road looks like ahead. Yeah. But she says, what I know is that I, for the first time in my life, probably, in feeling safe, gave my body permission and validity for what it had been saying.
For a long time.
That's beautiful.
That is gorgeous.
So, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago in therapy, this is messaging that I kept getting from my therapist, was like, you really need to listen to your body, listen to your body. And I told her, I was like, my wife says the same thing. And I have no idea what that means. Like, I don't understand what you mean when you talk about, my wife is always talking about how in touch she is with her body. She can tell like if things are even like a hair off, you know. It always reminds me of Rob Lowe in Parks and Recreation, when he's like a, this perfect machine and like one grain of dust can ruin it. Yeah, that's my wife. And so, but that's a concept that like, I really don't understand. And on the Enneagram, we've talked about like, I'm a three, I'm at the center of like the heart type. And Becky, you're an eight, right?
Yeah.
Which is the body the type, gut. Body center, gut. Whatever.
And your wife is a nine, right?
She's a nine, yeah.
Body also.
I'm a four though, so I'm a
I know, you're a mystery to me. Yeah. But,
but it's part of the, yeah, it's worth the
you're word. An exceptional person though, so.
You are too, my friend.
So here's what I want to say. I think there are probably people like me listening who maybe this all sounds like crazy talk.
Yeah.
And I know it's not, because what basically the work that I had to begin doing, this is why I started running, is because I needed to do something so that I could check in with myself as I did it and say, what am I feeling? What am I feeling? What am I feeling? And try to like learn that as a discipline, and it'd be like, my knee hurts, my shin hurts, everything hurts. That was the work for me. But it was learning to sort of acknowledge that and respond to it. And I would say like, I haven't done much of that work since then. I've continued running, but it just became a practice. It mm-hmm. stopped being about mm-hmm. being in tune with my body. And I still don't really know how to do that work. So I would love to spend a couple of minutes, if we can, just saying like, for folks like me or people who are maybe even just mm-hmm. beginning to learn to listen to their body, how?
Like, what do you think? Can you maybe think about your experience yesterday doing the breathing? When you say like, I don't know how to be in my body, can you think about that experience? And
yeah, I mean, I went into that experience expecting to feel nothing and thinking,
because it's just breath.
I'm going to do this because I feel peer pressure.
And how long is this going to take?
We're
going to
shame
oh
you
God.
If you don't.
And we're already running late. Yes. Yeah. But
hurry up. Let's get this done.
And remember, I was sensing you doing it wrong.
He was joking.
I was feeling that.
It's going to haunt me all day. No. I will get it right today. I went into it expecting to not feel anything. And then throughout the experience, thinking I was doing it, I was like, everybody knows that I'm doing it wrong. Mm. I've got to be doing it wrong. Can they see me? Are they, is this a trick? Are they tricking me? Is this, is there a camera? Yeah. I know there's cameras in this house.
Oh, there
filming
are
me.
Cameras on the, in the house.
And so the process, we didn't really talk about the process. It's Wim Hof breathing.
Yes.
It starts with a round of like
circular breathing,
circular
through
breathing,
your mouth,
yeah, so.
And you do about 40 or 60 breaths, and then
increasing
you do,
in rate.
Yeah. And then you do a breath hold for as long as you can after exhaling all your air. And then when it's time to breathe, you inhale, hold for 15 seconds, and then you exhale, and then you start over. And you do, I mean, ideally, I think 4 to 5 rounds, but 3 at minimum.
Yeah.
It takes about 10 minutes for 3.
We did 3. Mm-hmm. And again, I went into it as a skeptic and as a person who thinks I'm probably immune to whatever this is. You have to, maybe you have to be in touch with your body to experience something. Yeah. And the first long breath hold, I was looking out a window, laying on my back, looking up out of a window. And what I had been watching the whole time was the clouds moving very slowly. Mm. And in that moment, they started like glitching back and forth. And what you talked about a minute ago, like opening and closing, and like the earth was breathing. And I thought I was hallucinating. And I was just like, what the hell?
And you've probably only been holding your breath for 15 seconds at
yes.
that point.
Yeah. And like, yeah,
it's not crazy.
We had barely started. So, yeah. But even then I continued to sort of doubt like, no, you're imagining this, like you're letting your imagination run with this. And I'm not kidding. By the end of it, I had had multiple different experiences like that. I had pain in my abdomen. I had the tingling in my hands and my legs. I had all kinds. I got dizzy, and I did stand up and feel amazing after.
Yeah. And you started talking about your body.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. What did you first do when you stood up? And you,
I didn't want to talk about it.
You didn't want to talk
said,
about
I,
it.
I, y'all like, asked me what I experienced, and I said,
I got to go away.
I need to think about it first.
Yes, you said, and we pulled you back in to stay in your body. Hmm. So I want to say it's work.
Yeah.
And you
That's
did
the
it.
First step.
Well, vulnerability.
Yeah. And Becky, you invited Luke to consider.
Oh, I did. You're right. You I did like, invite. I didn't demand. I didn't, did I? Thank you very much. I
Luke had total freedom to say yes or no.
And you decided to trust us and yourself. And you talked about your body a lot. You noticed your body. You noticed the tension in your shoulders releasing after the second round.
Yeah.
So you put words to what was actually going on versus just taking it into your head, which I want to say, first and foremost, this integrating, grounding yourself, being in your own body is a process, not a destination. And second, I want to say, we cannot do it without curiosity. We have to be curious. And I disagree with people saying, like you saying, I'm not in touch with my body. Do you recognize when you have to go to the bathroom?
I hope so.
Yes.
I'm so uncomfortable right now.
Yes.
You know, can I say something as a three? I'm kind of vibrating over here because I know intimately what it feels like to not know what I'm feeling and be frustrated by that. And this curious, you know, like, what? My body. And I think for me, what I'm trying to learn, I'm very much a beginner on this, but I notice, and then I try to linger. Lately, I've noticed I have a sense of anxiety or dread that I'm pushing away all day. Aww. I'm pushing it away. And so what I find myself doing mindlessly is get to work, get busy on something. When I'm done working super, super hard and I've earned a couple of drinks at night, then I have a couple of drinks at night, which allows my mind to, you know, and that's okay. You know, it's not okay for everybody. It's that maybe I am on a journey with that, but what I'm trying to learn how to do in curiosity is linger with that sense of something's wrong and then linger with it as long as I can, like holding your breath for 15 seconds, maybe 15 seconds is all I can do instead of jumping right into the next thing. So I don't know what my body's telling me. I have no idea. But what I do know is that my pattern is shut it down, get away from that. That's scary. I don't like that. I don't like that feeling. It feels like chaotic. It feels out of control. I don't like that. So I'm going to get back in control by, you know, finishing that email, writing a chapter, doing some work, going upstairs and emptying the dishwasher, you know. So Mary comes and says, oh, thank you for emptying. Oh, validation, validation. You know, all these ways to push away what our body is telling us. And so, like, instead of pouring a drink right away, 15 seconds of just, okay, body. There's body scan you can do, you know. So you sit and you just imagine. You put your focus on the top of your head. Okay. And you move down to your earlobes and your temples. You start to let yourself relax. And you start to notice, like right now I'm even doing it. I'm noticing, oh, my shoulders are so tight. My low back hurts. I have a little pinch in my stomach. Now, I don't know what that is, but I don't have to know what that is.
Yeah.
All it is it's enough at first if you're a beginner like me. And please correct me if I'm wrong or add to it or whatever.
This is beautiful.
But just for as long as I can stand it, sit with it before numbing out, you know. And then you know what? I'm even learning. If 15 seconds is all you can stand, go ahead and pour that drink. You know what I mean? Like, like
just baby steps.
Like you're not a hero when you're starting, you know.
It's a good line.
Make it all the way through.
Go ahead. Actually, what if you actually are a hero when you're starting? Can we just pause and say, here's the thing is, you're worth it. And it's like, I think you're not a hero when you're starting. What I hear is, I have to get it right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant. Like,
you don't have to.
Well, and the work is always there.
Yes. It's always like, going to be there.
Being a hero doesn't mean there's no work left to do.
Right.
Like, it's just there's showing up for the work.
That's what I'm saying. Can you just show? You're showing up. That was beautiful.
It is beautiful.
And I want to say, I'm sitting here next to you, and all of a sudden you started doing it, and I just all of a sudden, okay, now I can do it. And it's like, that's where I think it's we need to do it in community. And I think the curiosity is the key. But you guys, I honestly think the other key is compassion for ourselves. Can we have, I forgot. I didn't do the, wait the 15 minute seconds.
It's okay that you numb out. Don't judge that even. Wait a minute. Is it okay?
It's observation void of judgment. Yes, it's just observation void of judgment. And then asking yourself, does this path like of sticking with this suffering or trying to move through the suffering, is it helping me or is it causing more harm? Can I
is it tov? Yeah. Is it regenerating life? Is it regenerating goodness inside myself? And I think that we can actually trust ourselves to answer that question honestly if we take time to be still and observe with lack of judgment. I think we can trust ourselves to choose a path that creates life instead of harm.
And if there's anybody listening that takes significant issue with Latifah and mushrooms, it goes out and buys your kids Super Mario Brothers. This is learned behavior.
Well, no, I actually do want to say very quickly as we wrap up is that if it's something that you're interested in or confused by, one, I don't think the whole world needs to take psilocybin. I'm not saying that. There is wonderful research. The Johns Hopkins Institute in Colorado has been studying this, and it's done a lot of movement for people with PTSD, depression, anxiety, for people who feel desperate and stuck. I have friends who were suicidal and had so much self-loathing and so much addiction and have done, you know, hero's journeys or, you know, a high dose of psilocybin with a trusted sitter and stood up a different person, and their life has changed and they're able to embody who they are. And now they're involved in helping heal the world and themselves. And it's been wild. It's something that if you would have asked me a couple years ago, if I would have considered, I would have thought you were a crazy person. I'm someone who has stayed away from all drugs. I had a dad who was an addict.
And you lived in Denver for a long time.
No, yeah. I mean, I really avoided, because with a parent who was an addict who went through rehab when I was 12, was there for 6 months. I mean, that created a lot of pain. I mean, I avoided alcohol till I was 21. I've gotten drunk twice in my entire life. Like, I really take what I put in my body incredibly seriously. And I don't like being out of my mind. But I really want to heal. And I really want to help being a part of healing work. And this presented itself and I could not deny it. And that's just my story. But yeah, there's lots of beautiful research out there by people who are very smart and very qualified and have all the letters next to their name that you need to feel good. But I just think that's important to note. The other thing that's really important and has been really impactful is the integrative work afterwards, the integration. The neuroplasticity in your brain after a plant medicine journey lasts up to about a week. And so we kind of talked about the neural pathway grooves being re-grooved from trauma into new messaging in your brain. Well, after these kind of larger experiences, you have that kind of neuroplasticity where you can continue to kind of re-groove those new thoughts and patterns and ideas in your brain to continue to recover. And so meditation, journaling, talk therapy, being surrounded by good community that you can kind of continue to process with. Walking is really powerful because it signals both sides, your left and right side of your brain and your body. Maybe as you're thinking, recording your experience and listening back and then focusing in and kind of repeating the healing messages to yourself. Those are all kind of ideas and thoughts around integrative work post a journey. And Michael Pollan writes about in his book, How to Change Your Mind. And there are a lot of people that talk about this, but I would just encourage anybody who is interested in this as a pathway for themselves to further heal, to really look into that as well. And I think that not doing this in isolation, so bringing people into the knowledge of what you're doing that you trust, and then having one other person or more with you during the experience will also help give you the support you need and the safety as you continue to do the work.
This episode of Fun Parts was produced, edited, and mixed by me, Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by the very talented Alan Lusink. Nerdy 30 was composed and produced by Latifah Alatas, and other music from this episode is from the fine folks at Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at funpartspodcast.com and be sure to follow us on social media at Fun Parts Podcast. Lastly, if you want access to bonus and behind-the-scenes content from this and other Milieu Media Group shows, join our neighborhood at the Patreon link in the show notes. And now, here's a scene from the next episode of Fun Parts.
But what I've noticed in people is those moments where the shame bomb explodes, it always creates some place of hiding. And the problem is, until we actually can find that shame kind of nuclear explosion, we keep dealing with behaviors. We deal with the behaviors, that's great. But I think there's this element of being able to go, oh, where did shame really get introduced to me?